She'll be there.
There she is.
There's Rachel.
Right on time.
Going as fast as I can.
How are you, Rachel?
All right. About yourself?
Tired in the rain.
Aren't we all?
That's all I'm going to say. Tired of the rain.
Yeah, let's end the workshop 10 minutes early so we will take a quick nap before.
I don't think you can do that. Got the multi-level stuff.
These go with, I have a waiver from isolation distance well as septic because there's no way to do it. So if we do the waiver, they gotta sign this to hold the township harmless.
Here's the correspondence. Tony, did you draw this up?
I did.
And have you done this in other places? Has there been litigation over this?
Now, the closest we ever came to litigation was when somebody found out that the septic was within 100 feet of their well that had been replaced, but the original septic was within 100 feet of the well, too, and it had been there for 60 years.
Okay. Do these get recorded against the property?
No. Signed by the property owner. They're for liability, not them.
Well, how do we make sure that... Okay, so wait. They're for our benefit.
Just the parcel ID number. That's why you put the parcel ID number in. They get filed under parcel ID number.
So if someone comes in and they want to buy the property and they check our records, this is supposed to come up.
Right.
And does this indemnity hold if there's a subsequent buyer?
Not unless it's in the deed. So unless we haven't changed the deed, it doesn't hold.
And so the subsequent buyer could very well come back and sue.
That's why we would have to have it in the deed.
How do you,
hey, John.
How are you?
Hey, John.
How do you get it in the deed?
I think you're going to have to go through a hearing process and have that as one of the conditions. You can schedule a hearing. That's what DEP usually does. They'll schedule a hearing and make that as a condition. Unless the people voluntarily want to do that. You have to put it in there that if the successors and assigns are bound, we can add a paragraph indicating their successors and assigns could be bound. But again, if it's not the deed, they have no constructive notice of it.
Right. Well, it could be recorded. It doesn't have to be in the deed to be recorded.
In order to be recorded, it'd have to be notarized and the whole thing. So we'd have to go back.
You'd have to have it revised to be accurate to reflect that. Yeah.
I could do that if you desire.
I mean...
I suggest you do. This was a 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
oh, my.
Recording in progress.
Last
There's no way to do anything on it.
There's no way to do
I found out 2
anything.
Hours ago.
It's not the first time I've done it. I've done plenty of these. We never had a problem.
What's that?
Waiver, distance, septic, well.
That's pretty normal. Somebody else.
And we're gonna put an Elgin system in on it. So water that comes out of that's drinkable, so there's no chance of contamination.
Is this a residential?
Yeah. Residential postage stamp.
I didn't give
it's actually a half acre, but I think only an eighth of it's usable going down to a Deepbrook Street.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty normal stuff. Right?
John, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. Still doing our meeting in
still
2 weeks?
Doing it on the 30th.
30th, okay, great.
So, whenever you want.
Yeah, we're going to start at 6:30, 7? I don't remember.
6:30, I think.
6:30 and 7? Or on the 30th? 6:30, 6:30 is...
If we could start at 6, I'd start at 6.
Let me look at my phone.
This is all I gave to you, but...
Okay.
I mean, I'm...
Thank you.
I'm good anytime that night, so...
Okay.
So if you want to do 6, earlier is the better for me.
The earlier is the better for me, too.
Let's see what time we told everybody already.
I was going to say, it should have been advertised. That's the time we need to stick with.
I think it was 6.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't have it in my phone, so...
I got 7.
7?
Can you check what time the advertisement was for?
I didn't advertise.
Oh, all right. Well, that
can be advertised 24 hours before the meeting. So I was planning to advertise next week. So it will be up not this Thursday, the following Thursday.
And the dispatch.
Right.
So whatever time you gentlemen decide can be ratified and...
6. I mean, earlier the better, I think.
Is everybody good with 6?
Everybody good with 6?
That's the earliest I can possibly get here.
That means Mikey won't make it.
What time would it have to be for Mikey to make it?
I don't know this. I'm not sure what. He's on night shift, so I don't know whether that's one of his days off or what he's working. He just switched to nights, so...
Yeah, he mentioned that, I think, that he was...
Yeah, he just switched to nights. Yeah. He works 3 on, 3 off, so I don't know what he's got.
Okay. I have not had a chance to look at the minutes yet, I'm sorry.
I mailed the ambulance check, but it hasn't been cashed yet. So it's... Practically, it's $15,000 less.
Okay. And then you have to file the quarterly report with the county, right?
Yes. As soon as I pay, I scan it and send it to the county.
Mikey's working on that.
Okay, so he can't come?
No.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
That's what it looks like. I just did it. It's 3 on, 3 off.
Yeah, I already updated it online, that $15,000 check.
Year's almost half over.
Yep.
Like,
where did it go to, John?
Where?
Holy cow.
It is unbelievable.
It rained down into the Delaware.
We're 2 weeks from July, and it's like, where did the year, my goodness. Does it go faster the older you get?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
And how do weeks go by like days?
No, that's all right.
You get any older, don't mean a month go by like days.
That's it.
Yeah. And all it does is rain anymore.
And Alaska's going to have a heat wave.
What's that?
Alaska's having her first ever heat wave.
Really? Yeah. I haven't paid attention. I've heard the Pacific Northwest has been dry, unusually dry and hot. I didn't know about Alaska, but...
Today was their first ever heat wave.
Really?
High 70s, low 80s.
Wow. Yeah, gosh, it's unfortunate for them.
Especially when the sun doesn't go down.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've heard Oregon and... The state of Washington has been unusually dry in recent history, like last year or more.
Three of my nieces live in Seattle and they're talking about how they're not getting any rain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they pretty much live in this, like, on an ongoing basis, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, they said that it's really unusually dry.
Yeah, it's all messed up this year. Look at Florida, got what, 6-8 inches of snow? That sun may actually got more than we did.
I was actually talking to a guy who works down in the oil fields in Texas, and he was talking about how much snow they got this winter.
I don't understand.
You know, you don't think of Texas and snow.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, he said he got a bunch of snow.
I was just talking to my ex-brother-in-law the other night. He's in Texas. He was talking about the snow.
What's that?
Mary Cooney called this morning for Greenwood Hills.
While we're...
Is that one you're talking about?
No.
No, that's the AutoZone.
While we're in the workshop, let's let John speak because he's got to go to a meeting.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I had talked to Bob last week. He said that you were going to have 407 up for discussion again. It was on the agenda to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know, you know, what your next steps are. I know when I was last with you last month, we had talked about me looking at a couple different areas where it might benefit making some additions to the 407 for, you know, help clarify, you know, what it is that we want to try to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I put together what I'll call just a preliminary draft of comments, what I think I can help out with or highlight, and just, you know, wanted you to review it. I mean, we don't need to, like, act on it tonight, obviously. Nice. But the, you know, I spent a little bit of time just looking at other ordinances, and what's interesting is...
Thank you very much.
You know, I think... Well, I kind of broke it into three areas that I took out of our last meeting. One is about putting in a line or a provision early on in 407. It talks about having a qualified professional do a risk assessment, which I right. think would be something very simple. Could be a professional engineer or a hydrologist or geologist, whoever we consider qualified. Pretty much, I think the state of Pennsylvania really own. I don't know much about the... in how they license geologists or hydrologists, but I'm not sure they do, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
they do.
You know, or I don't know if it has to be a professional engineer, but if, yeah. but it's someone who comes with a resume
right.
that says, you know, this is, it's kind of like with wetlands people. Mm-hmm. You know, wetlands, they don't license wetlands people, but, you know, they come with a resume that's, you know, understood or respected. So I think the risk assessment would be something that, you know, would... the applicant would provide, you know, by a qualified professional what the impacts are for the proposed project, right? And so that was kind of what I thought that that's something that a designated representative, whether it's the zoning officer or your town-appointed engineer on an ongoing basis in the future, you know, somebody who could review the assessment and determine if a hydrology study would be necessary. All right. So that would be kind of like an early part of 407 is like, okay, if you are in this, just provide a statement or a report or a letter by a qualified individual. Then, you know, as far as hydrology studies, aside from pinpointing what I'll call some numerical specifics, you know, I went through some references that I have, as well as looked at other like ordinances, not just in Pennsylvania, but elsewhere, about what a hydrology study would include. And that's kind of what's in page 2, you know, of what it is, other than, you know, just pinpointing like some numerical things, like, you know, hydrology studies, you know, as far as depth of water tables or area of watershed or distance from certain elements, you know, that's things I could plug in, you know, in a little bit more refinement of this. But I think the third part was, you know, what do we do? What can we qualify as exemptions? And I think, you know, right now, you know, I like the 1 acre threshold just because it kind of coincides with our stormwater permitting anyway. So I think if someone's going to be thrown into an NPDES permit, they're going to have to do a whole bunch of study of watershed regardless, right? Because that's just how the NPDES permits work. So I think if they're less than an NPDES permit, you know, that could be one exemption. The other would be the size of the development. Like, I think I like the number 10,000 square feet because I think for the average person, you know, that's putting up a small warehouse or you know, storage barn, I'll call it, it doesn't like require them to do a whole lot. But I think once you start to get above 10,000 square feet, your development is probably going to include over an acre of land anyway. Because if you're going to do a 10,000 square foot footprint of a building or barn or whatever you're going to do, you're going to be over an acre. You know, just, you know, that's just a rough, that's about a quarter of an acre, and everything associated with it is probably going to exceed that 1 acre. So those are numbers that I've been kind of playing with in my mind. So I wanted to see what your thoughts are, and, you know, and see what more, how much more you want me to refine what I'm trying to say here. So any thoughts or questions?
Not having read it yet.
No, no, but I mean, I didn't expect it to, but I wanted you to, you know, call it preliminary comments. I don't know how quickly are you trying to memorialize 407? Like, when do you want to? Like sooner than later?
Sooner than
six
better.
Months ago?
Yeah.
when you think about something like you've been participating in the discussions regarding AutoZone, and my understanding is that, you know, the location's unique quality in proximity to a community well on our watershed map, plus the unique nature of, you know, a standard retail like Dollar General, yeah, maybe they have a little bit of oil, they have a little bit of, you know, brake cleaner, or what, you know, a couple little things compared to something that has a lot of chemicals on site that could be damaging to the water. How would the 1 acre size, do you think, if that's the criteria, how would that protect from those kinds of issues?
Well, I think, like, we'll use AutoZone as an example. You know, and I think the concern is if they had a catastrophe, like a fire or something that would cause the issue, because I mean, I think,
right, a standard operating, you're not leaking stuff,
you're
right?
Not leaking stuff. So yeah. the issue, you know, because their standard protocol, I mean, they have to follow their own, you know, I'm mm-hmm. sure there's retail regulations, there's other criteria, which I'm not necessarily privy to because I don't do that business, but they're going to have their own containment regardless. So your issue is if they come in with a 0.99 acre development to plop a building down.
Well, I'm asking you size-wise, do you think that will cover, you know, that the more specialty types that could mm-hmm. present unique hazards, would they, do you think, mostly fall inside the regulated grouping or outside the regulated grouping?
I think like if we use 1 acre as a number, I think, because I don't know, I mean, AutoZone's a unique case, but I mean, I'm thinking right. like your normal repair shop, right? You know, right. they have to follow certain environmental regulations for containments and things of that nature, regardless, you know, how they control their oils or their recycling of materials. So they're all in sorts of containment or inside, whether it's a, you know, not like within the building a certain containment or outside the building a certain containment. So I think there's always going to be what ifs, even on the smallest of projects, because I mean, you could have somebody just go into a garage and start changing oil, right? There's always going to be issues, which I think I think what we're really looking at, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, is larger developments, even if it's a 5 acre development or 10 acre development, where you're going to have potential impacts. And then I think that the way we define this, it'll force them to first do the risk assessment, right? Because now they go on record, by have a qualified professional go on record to say, here's the risk involved, you know, so that gives us an opportunity to review them and determine whether we want them to do a further hydrology study about the impacts.
And the rest, I mean, some of it, like AutoZone, we just went through this with the planning board. You still have a conditional use hearing. You got to count on your conditional use hearing to set the proper conditions too. And AutoZone for containment actually sunk the whole building floor, and right. I have ramps going in now to doors to go into the building, so that if anything happened inside, everything that they have in there would be contained within the floor
within
of the
building. Yeah. And that's part of them doing their assessment,
that's
right?
That's part of a risk assessment, you know, right.
Coming in and saying, this is how our buildings are designed, and this is why you shouldn't have a concern about, you know, the watershed, because we're going to protect it.
Right.
So by the size of the building, mm-hmm. using that as an example, would it fall into the regulated or out of the regulated?
When you say regulated, what do you mean?
If you're using your 1 acre NPDES trigger point, mm-hmm. would that development fall into the regulated or outside of the regulated?
If it's over the 1 acre?
Well, there's a plan.
Yeah,
someone's seen a plan. AutoZone's
over an acre.
Yeah.
So it would fall in the regulated.
It would fall in the regulation.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by a standard, do you think most would fall in for anything of that sort of nature or size?
I think so. Anything of that size or nature, yes, would fall into the regulated, yes.
Okay.
And I think
most retail and service.
The 1 acre hmm? Is
most,
never going to...
Most retail and service businesses would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the issue, like, with the 1 acre, I mean, Pike County is always going to be a high-quality watershed. That's not going to change. Okay. So regardless of our own ordinance, the state has viewed Pike County as a high quality. So the 1 acre is never going away. That's going to be something that every applicant, if they're doing a development over 1 acre, they're going to have to go through that DEP process. That's just, which in a lot of respects, that stormwater analysis and design is part of a hydrology study. It's like, what are you doing with your water? How are you going to control it? How are you going to treat it for water quality purposes? And then how are you going to release it? That's all part of
NPDES.
In NPDES, yes.
So, having been through a round of hearings for a project where the project was certainly taking the approach that nothing that they were doing was going to present, you know, any sort of hydrogeological issues, when you get the report from the qualified person mm-hmm. and they say no, how do you evaluate the accuracy of that information?
Well, I think depending on the level of project, you know, we may take a couple of different approaches. So I think if we use the terminology of, you know, a representative of the township, we could do one of two things. You could have someone like myself who represents the town and provide professional expertise or consultation, could do it. If it's a very simple thing, you know, it could be something that the planning commission and or the zoning officer could do. Or we could, if we feel very sensitive about it, we could hire an outside specialist of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the project is of such, like I'll use the warehouse because that's, you know, the elephant in the room. You know, if a project like that came again, you know, in the case like that, I would say, let's hire an independent third party engineering firm that specializes in this, you know, from anywhere down in Scranton, Stroudsburg, some New York City, whatever, that's going to review it on behalf of the town. So that's why I'm saying, like, if we keep the language loose enough to say that it's a representative of the town, you know, obviously that's a way we can approach that. Yeah.
The biggest issue we're falling into is the conditional use versus the land development. So it's where do we get the information for the use? You know, like, again, the warehouse. We're building a warehouse. It's just there to whoever wants to rent it. Well, we know whoever wants to rent it's going to have to come back in. But at that point, was it built to protect that? You know what I mean?
Right, well, when you're looking at the conditional use, you're looking at, does that use, that particular use, generate a greater than normal danger to the community at that location for some odd, you know, for some to be defined and put into the record reason? And if so, what conditions can be put in place to mitigate that?
But we still got to get back to getting the information for the conditional use.
The issue that we ran into, quite frankly, was that the standards that were in 407 originally were rather vague. Mm-hmm. And the applicant took the position that I don't have to supply this information at this time. This is something that I can do at land development.
Land development, yeah.
And that's the usual position that most applicants take, and the reason they do that is because the conditional use is really for purposes of determining whether zoning is going to allow it.
Right, well, it's an expensive endeavor, and so before they know if the use is going to be permitted, they'd like to spend as little money as possible. I understand the cost value aspect of it, but we also have to have enough information to evaluate whether it does present a danger at a particular site or with a particular type, and it's difficult to find that out.
Yeah, and it's a difficult exercise because the courts always hold on behalf of the applicants.
Yeah. Well, that was a unique case because they were doing it on spec. So we don't know what.
That's not unique. 75% of them in the state are done.
No, I know. I mean, it's. I don't know if you paid attention to what's happening in and around Middletown, but there's countless warehouses proposed, and there's there's an ongoing battle there for this very similar reasons. But
Sparta and Monroe County.
It's everywhere.
It's all no matter where you look.
Lehigh Valley.
I mean, it's just.
It's everywhere.
And it's not going away.
But I think that's where I'm coming from is that we need to have something specific that we need to do, that they need to do, so that at the conditional use stage, they have to do the risk assessment.
Yes.
It has to be reviewed. And if we're not satisfied with the risk assessment, they've got to do it again before they get their conditional use.
I would agree. That's the door to open it to the conditional use, the risk assessment.
Yeah.
Instead of hiring a qualified individual, can't we use Milford Water Authority in that place?
No.
I wish we could. They don't have a qualified individual.
Well, not only that, but they're a part and parcel, so right. you'd want somebody completely independent to review it. So
I would agree with the risk assessment that should be in there because that's what keys it into the conditional use here.
And that's what
John, I just had one question.
Yeah.
On page 2 you have the quantifying of impacts in the project. Okay. And how do you determine at a preliminary stage if you're altering a drainage pattern?
Well, that's part of the issue with stormwater controls. So if you are going into a natural landscape, say, depending on the site, but let's say it's a natural landscape and you are developing it into a 5 or 10 acre development, you're gonna alter the drainage patterns.
Okay.
Both on your site as well as what could precede your site and then outlet from your site.
So I guess my specific question is, if someone were to look at this, they would say, okay, I know I need to do my lot coverage for impervious surfaces. I know I need to do something about drainage patterns, and I've got to do something about pollutants. Is this enough to make them do a full assessment as to what the pollutants are going to be on the property?
I mean, we could elaborate from that, but I think what I'm trying to identify as the bullet point is that they identify all their potential pollutants,
that's
whatever they may be.
Right.
Depending on the nature of the development, You know, warehousing is one thing. Depending on what's inside versus how they treat their outside.
Yeah, because I just don't want to get caught in the argument because I know it's going to be coming eventually.
So,